Are you a big brain of the beautiful game? Prove it with the great new app that'll test your football knowledge to the limit. Name That Player. Download the Name That Player app today and race against the clock to identify the Premier League players purely from a list of the clubs they've played for. Put your football knowledge to the ultimate test with the Name That Player app. Available right now for iOS and Android from the App Store and Google Play. Name That Player. Can you beat the best?
Shoot the defence, the best podcast in the world. We're at it.
That should be a club legend. It's just totally disrespectful. And like I say, it's just a lack of respect, lack of class. And I hope they get relegated and liquidated.
Jan, do you want to do that voice of your barber so we can guess which nationality he is?
Are you ready?
Sounds like a really bad porno, mate.
And the fact that we had now taken our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable. And with very young players, so it was...
Yeah, but I've seen misses, like...
But that wasn't a miss.
Misses, he stopped his mate from scoring it.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence. I'm your host, Stel, and I've got three co-hosts with me. First of all, the returning Double D from the D&D for Your Factory. Welcome back, young man.
What's going on, Stel? You good? Hope everyone's okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, yes, I'm good, but then I got a frog in my throat, and then I started sounding like a bit, you know, Cartman-ish. Fucking hell. What a great way to start the show. Anyway. Right, co-host number two is Toby from Tapping Football. How you doing, mate? You alright?
I'm good, man. Thank you for having me on, man. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, great to have you on, man. Great to have you on. I've been listening to your podcast and the other one the other week about Greek football fans. I was a little bit rattled.
Sorry, man. Nothing personal.
No, it's fine. I'm joking. It's all right. Believe me, I've seen the best and worst of Greek football fans. So when you made that comment, I was like, yeah, he knows exactly what I'm going through. Anyway, so from one debutant to another, our resident Leeds United fan, finally he's on the show. KG, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
Hello, Stel, thank you for having me.
Great to have you on. Mate.
I was supposed to be on last year, wasn't I, when we got promoted, but we decided to put off the party for a year, so here I am now.
Well, the way United are going right now, we might be joining you there down there next year. They keep saying, oh yeah, we can't wait to play Leeds United again. We miss those days. Oh, be careful what you wish for, sunshine.
Chapman's going to come down to the game just for all time's sake.
Jesus Christ. Can you imagine Jesse Lingard will be on 48 months without a goal? Christ. Jesus. Anyway, let's go on with the Premier League, shall we, while United are still in it. And Liverpool's unbeaten league run stretches to 22 games following their 2-1 win at Stamford Bridge. Goals from Trent Alexander-Arnold and Roberto Firmino means Klopp's men are the first team to win their opening six games in the successive seasons. Bastards. Toby, Alexander-Arnold's free kick was straight from the training ground and took Chelsea completely by surprise. Could they have done better with it, though?
Yes, they could have. I don't know about the actual strike, because I think I can't remember who it was that rolled off the ball, but once whoever it was rolled off the ball and Trent hit that, it was only going top bins. But the reason why I think they could have done better is because they could have avoided the free kick altogether. It was brilliant play from Fabinho to beat two Chelsea players and slide the ball into Mane, but there is no need for Christensen to go in that harshly in the challenge, right in such a sort of precarious position for his club. And I think that's synonymous with something which we've seen from Christensen pretty much since that Barcelona game a year and a half ago, when Messi snatched his soul and sent it to the gods. So I think ever since then, he's always been prone to making one or two errors. And I feel like that was a crucial error for Chelsea. And of course, with someone like Trent on the set piece, they've been duly punished.
Wasn't it Willian that was trying to close him down? He didn't get anywhere near him.
Who's that, Trent?
Yeah, I think so. When the ball was rolled to him, wasn't it Willian that was making the run from Trent's left, I think?
I can't remember. But obviously it was Fabinho. I can't remember if it was Willian, but it's obviously Fabinho's the one who's beaten two Chelsea players. He slid the ball into Mane. Christensen is marking Mane. He's at the edge of the area. There's no need to make a silly challenge. Just shepherd him out and shepherd him and shield the pathways towards the goal, and at least that should be it. There's no need to foul him there, because when you foul him there, you're in a situation now where Salah can punish you, Trent can punish you. So they got punished.
Yeah, absolutely. And D, this was by no means an easy win for Liverpool, and Chelsea almost grabbed an equaliser at the end with Mason Mount. I think the ball was a little bit behind him. Were Liverpool intentionally cautious, or do you think fatigue played a part?
I think fatigue played a part, guys. But at the same time, it was a bit of respect that we, too much respect we showed to Chelsea, but also as well, yeah, I think fatigue definitely played a part, because even when you look at Kante's goal, it's probably the only mistake that Fabinho made in the whole 90 minutes. He let him have a run. But I suppose if it's Kante running at you and it's not a Mount or Abraham, someone you expect to shoot, maybe even a Jorginho, because we've seen him score from outside the box before, over here and back when he was in Italy as well. So I think it's like basketball. If you see a centre with the ball pulling up outside the three-point line, you're going to leave him alone. But we got punished for it. And in the end, as you pointed out, Mount had the chance towards the end. They had a couple headers. Batshuayi had a header that just went wide. But Liverpool, I didn't really care for the performance. The main thing was to go out and get the 3 points, because it was a game against somebody in the top six. Klopp's record against top six teams away from home is not great. Though overall, he still has the best record of since he's come into the league against top six sides, but their away form needs to improve. So the main thing here was to get the result. But yeah, I think they got tired towards the end and almost lost it of all their great work. But big up Andy Robertson, because that run that he went on in injury time when he won the ball and then breezed past about three people, I thought he was going to run all the way. I thought he was going to do a Ryan Giggs for a minute. But the main thing was the result, because Liverpool needs to keep winning, because when Man City are angry, like Saturday, we see what happens. Yeah? So the aim is to stay as far away from it as possible.
Dude, tell me something. I know people are saying that Liverpool got that World Club Cup in December, which is in Qatar.
Yeah,
and they're saying, oh, well, you know, it's another two games and they're going to be tied. But let me tell you something. Being someone that knows all about going to the Middle East, in December, it's 28 degrees. I think it's going to be a bit of a holiday more than anything. I really can't see Liverpool getting all stressed out about a couple of games, because they're only really playing two games, aren't they? If they beat the semi-finalists, which will probably be a South American team or whatever. And then they'll play in the final against, I don't know, maybe an Arabic team. I don't know, but I don't think it's going to be this arduous task for them. You know, they'll probably have their feet up a lot of the time.
You know, but the reason why Liverpool fans are probably getting a little cautious about it is because last year, after they got knocked out of the FA Cup, they went on a warm weather holiday and then they came back and they kept on bloody drawing. So they're probably nervous that might happen again. But yeah, as you're saying, a little holiday, a little breakaway. But what it will do is clog up the fixtures when they get back, because obviously we're going to have the winter break for the first time in February, aren't we? So there's not that set space to tuck the games in. So we're going to have it, depending on how far we get in the cups, might have a period where we've got a game every 3 days. And when it happened last year with Prem and Champions League, that's where the draws came in, and then Man City kicked on, won all those games in a row, went on and won the league. But in terms of actually being there at the time, as you're saying, it's mad hot out there. I know a lot of people that go out there. So holiday could be a good little break. If they're top of the league, could be a good thing to clear their minds, a bit of escapism, come back, get it on. But I badly want to win the World Club Cup, by the way, because last time we won the Champions League in 2005, we played, was it Santos? And we were absolutely robbed. Like, the three poor refereeing decisions. We hit the bar, hit the post and whatnot. I desperately want to win it, just like I was happy that we won the Super Cup.
Well, you're scheduled to play Watford on the 14th, which is the final game before, which you'll probably slap them 9-0. and then you play the World Club semi-final. You're meant to be playing West Ham away that day. So that's been postponed. If you win that one, you miss the Leicester game, which is on Boxing Day, which is away. And then the final on the 28th, you should be playing Wolves that day at home. So effectively, you've been, what, three games you have to catch up on? So yep. I see where you come from. And then you've got Sheffield United at home on New Year's Day. So, yeah, I can see where you're coming from there. But then you've got Spurs and United after that, and Spurs won't be easy, but United, again, you'll probably dig them. So
yeah. that's at home, isn't it?
The Spurs is away. So they've got Spurs at White Hart Lane and then United at home.
This is why I thought that we were going to buy a couple of people in the summer, but I suppose it's hard buying backups because you can't always attract a person when, you know, you're not being guaranteed first-team football.
I hear this, but don't you think at the same time with Jurgen Klopp's charisma, he can entice someone to be part of whatever it is that he's trying to build at Liverpool? Because I was mentioning this on my pod as well. I think that whole excuse about, oh, who can we buy that's going to willingly come and sit on the bench? I think players ultimately want to win. Mahrez was a Premier League winner, and he opted to join Man City knowing full well he was not going to be a guaranteed starter. Why? Because he knew that there was another Premier League title on the cards, and he knew that there's a chance at Europe. And it's the same thing again this season. I think that Jurgen Klopp charisma, the competitions that Liverpool are winning and the competitions that Liverpool have the capability to win, for me, should be enough of a sway for him or your club to go out and get X, Y, and Z to join your club and join the fight for trophies.
Well, I know Marquisio is available on a free. I know Quentrao is available on a free. So that's a left-back and a central midfielder right there. I think Ben Arthur is actually available on a free, isn't he?
None of these players, but Marquisio would work in a club system.
What about Jack Rodwell? He's free. Jack Rodwell.
Yeah. Are we stuck in 2020?
I don't think Wilfred Bony's got a club either while we're there.
Well, to be fair, I mean, Panathinaikos in Greece, who've got Makeda as a striker, they didn't even want Rodwell, so I think it just says it all, really.
Makeda's playing in Greece now.
Yeah,
wow.
Man. Yeah, he missed the penalty the weekend against Olympiacos in the derby, but they drew, so
Yeah, Olympiacos are used to drawing, aren't they?
Yeah. They're also used to paying referees, allegedly. But,
Oh, look at that. Ledley's available as well.
Christopher Samba, Alan Hutton, they're all available for free. Giuseppe Rossi.
Eunice Kabul.
Obafemi Martins.
Alan Hutton.
Stephen Ireland, mate.
Giuseppe Rossi.
Yeah. Then again, given Stephen Ireland's track record, they will probably think of a deceased relative, and then they're actually alive.
I couldn't believe he did that just to get off international duty. That was shocking.
I actually read his article on The Athletic, and obviously he didn't. From the sounds of it, obviously he didn't mean for it to get as bad as it did, but obviously once it was out there, it was sort of hard for him to sort of backtrack and get out of it, really.
As Beyonce once said to Jay-Z, you're only sorry because you got caught.
I can't believe you just quoted Beyonce.
Jesus.
We go there, mate. We go there. It doesn't matter. KG, you could tell Klopp was very relieved at full time and even told the BBC that Stamford Bridge is never an easy place to go to. Do you think they could beat Arsenal's unbeaten record of 49 games?
I think out of all of the teams now, they've got the best chance. You know, because Liverpool now, they seem to have that thing that Man United used to have in the 90s and early 2000s, that fear factor, you know, of playing them. And looking at their fixtures next, they've got a couple of tricky ones. They've got Sheffield United away, but then they've got Leicester City at home, Man United away. but then they got Tottenham at home. And then somewhere in November, they've got Man City. And you'd think that if they come through those games, they've got every chance. The only thing I worry about at Liverpool is the burnout. You know, they rely on those three up front so much that it's hard to rotate one of them out, isn't it? Because you always see the drop-off when one of those three are out.
Yeah, true. Dee, do you think we're going to see Shaqiri anytime soon?
Shaqiri needs to... I know he had some problems towards the back end of last season, but he needs to play more because he's got set-piece ability, score from long range, and he's creative as well. When he was getting starts last season, he was setting Salah up a lot. Just a couple of slide rule passes and whatnot, just bring something different to the team, because the thing is that
in the centre, we've got workman like samey midfielders in the centre. So you just need something different sometimes. So when Ox plays, you see Ox carrying the ball, he'll have a shot. It is something different. That's why so much creativity. So much creativity has to come from the fullbacks. But imagine if you've got a ball carrier in the centre and the fullbacks as well, they're not going to know what to do. That's how we beat Newcastle. Because Ox was in there driving once, fullback pushed on, Trent almost scored twice, Robertson almost scored twice, Robertson got an assist. And that's, even though we've been unbeaten for so long, we can just take it up just that little notch that can make us compete longer in all four competitions, rather than just being the league and the Champions League. But we need to have faith in Brewster, Origi, couple of the youngsters. We've got a couple of good young kids like Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott, though he's so young. He looks decent, not afraid to have a goal. So we play MK Dons on Wednesday. We'll see how much faith he's got in the backups with the team that he names on Wednesday. Because some of those people there will be auditioning to come in for certain games. But out of everyone, I'd say Shaqiri would be my choice if you are going to take one of the front three out, because he can score. He was the fourth joint top scorer last season and he barely played after January. Yeah. So... needs game time, man. Klopp has to trust other people. He's just not the favouritism. Certain times I see our midfield and I'm like, they call it the Brexit, even though Wijnaldum's in it, they call it the Brexit midfield, isn't it? The one that started against Napoli, when it's Wijnaldum, Henderson and Milner. It's like, where's the creativity? You know what I'm saying? Need Fab in there.
And one of the players, you know? Sorry. No, just one of the players that you got out on loan, Harry Wilson, could have slotted in nicely in that front three. He's got he's dynamic, he's quick, and he's got a good shot on him. He'd fit in well.
Yep, that's what I thought as well. And he was auditioning pre-season and he banged in a long ranger as well. And Klopp was going to give him a go in the Charity Shield game. But then apparently he had a long phone call with Eddie Howe. And Eddie Howe promised him he'll use Wilson regularly until David Brooks is fit. So then Klopp said, if he'll get more minutes than you lot, that's the only reason why we loaned him. Otherwise he would have stayed, yeah. But what, three goals already? He hasn't even started all the games.
Double figures. There you go. Right, gents, Chelsea haven't won a league game at home yet, but you can tell they're making progress under Lampard. Which areas of the pitch do you think he'll improve when the transfer embargo is over? What do you reckon, Toby?
I would say they would definitely try and go for a wide player, in my opinion. The reason why I say they go for a wide player is because Willian, he's a spent force. I think they flogged that horse well enough now. Like, he's finished, in my opinion. I think they're going to try and look to move William on, if not the end of this summer, then at least relatively soon. Pedro, 31 going, 32 years old. So then that really leaves you with just Pulisic, Mason Mount. And then to a certain extent, Ruben Loftus-Cheek is like attacking. The options to play across the attacking three. So, Callum Hudson-Odoi. So I think they will look to try and sign another player in that position. They may probably try and sign another striker and get rid of Batshuayi, because although I'm impressed with Tammy Abraham, I still don't think he is the striker that Chelsea will need long-term going forward.
Mm. What do you reckon, D?
I'm trying to... where could they improve? I think centre half. I do like the look of Tomori, though, and I was saying that last season, the few times I saw him play for Derby. Yeah, Defo centre forward, as Toby said. I'm trying to think of who. I'm not. Ross Barkley at Everton, loved the guy, even though I hate Everton. But at Chelsea, I just don't know. I don't know.
He's just not cut out for it.
He just doesn't look comfortable when he's playing. But when he was at Everton, he'll get the ball, beat a man, put a tackle in, thread the ball, Lukaku scores, he looked comfortable. But I think he feels as though he's always playing for his place at Chelsea and never looks 100% comfortable. Whereas at Everton, he was going to play, so he was comfortable, strolling, and he could change gear at any time. So maybe a creative centre mid.
I think they need to sign another centre back, to be honest. I think the transfer embargo has shown us a lot of things, and one of those things is, for now, even though I used to like him, I don't think Kurt Zouma is good enough for Chelsea. I don't think he's enough for Chelsea. Tomori, who I actually liked I still had my doubts over where he would, over probably how he would cope with a big step up. But he's taking it in his stride, and he's improving game by game. So realistically, that leaves you with just Rudiger, Christensen, and Tomori. And I'm of the opinion that aside competing on all honours and all fronts, they need four centre-backs, four capable centre-backs. So I think if I was them in the summer, I'd look to move on Curtis Zouma, and I'd try and bring in another centre-back as well.
Okay, KG?
Yeah, I mean, in regards to Ross Barkley, he makes a good point, because we had him at Leeds when he's on loan with us, and I've seen him on loan at Sheffield Wednesday. And to be honest, he looks the exact same player now as he did back then. He's got good running, good dribbling, but his shots go over the bar, wide. They go everywhere except for in the goal. He's still the same player. But, who I think they'll get? I think they'll want to get a striker. As good as Abraham's been, he does it against the lesser clubs, but you can see against like Man United and Liverpool, he tries that bit too hard, and you can see in the way he plays, whereas against Wolves and Sheffield United, he's much more relaxed, because, you know, they're more hit where he's playing in the Championship last year. So I think they might look for another striker as well.
There you go. Excellent. Right, Liverpool's title rivals, Man City, beat Watford. Worse than Ike beat Tina on Saturday. While their other deadly rivals, United... While their other deadly rivals, United, went down 2-0 at the London Stadium. Meanwhile, at the duty-free arena, James Maddison inspired Leicester to a 2-1 win against Spurs. Did I say inspired? Inspired, sorry, gentlemen. Toby, it looked like plain sailing when Kane gave Spurs a lead, but a controversial VAR decision turned the game on its head. Now, what are your thoughts on Spurs' performance and, of course, that VAR call? I'm going to just light the cigar now and put my feet up, because I know you're ready for this.
So let me start with the VAR decision, because obviously that's the quickest one I can get into. So for me, I'm not going to moan about it. I've been backing VAR all season, and whilst I think it is being misused for subjective decisions, I believe in those areas, the one thing I can give it is that they've been consistent with that all season. Right from the first game, when Sterling was offside by a fraction. Well, it wasn't even a fraction. You couldn't even tell during the replay, but they ruled it out as an offside. I'm not really going to complain about the Sun goal being chalked off, but it did change the momentum of the game. But ultimately, they had one disallowed, we had one disallowed. That's not why we lost. Now, let's get on to the game, because I personally don't think we played that bad. I think we did more than enough to get a point. And on another day, we could have won that 2-1, and you wouldn't really have had much complaints. And it's not to say that Leicester played bad. I thought like Leicester played relatively well, but they didn't play well enough, in my opinion, to win that game. Now, why did we lose that game? One man's to blame, Pochettino. I love Pochettino. I love him as a coach to bits, but yesterday he got it all wrong. On the train out to Leicester, I told my friend, vehemently, I told him, there's no excuse for leaving Ali at home. Impossible. It doesn't make sense. A player who has literally scored at the King Power 2 out of 3 times he's played there. He scored 2 out of 3 times he's played there, and you don't take him. Or in fact, 2 out of 4 times he's played there, you don't take him. That's strike number one. Considering he took 3 DMs to put on the bench instead of Ali. So that's strike number one. Strike number two, during the game in the second half as well, it was clear to see that Leicester were coming on to us a lot more at the start of the second half, and we were inviting a lot of pressure. But it also meant that we were able to hit them on the counter. We had a few opportunities on the counter, and Lamela had a decent game, but it's that point in time where Pochettino, he's too slow to react. He's not urgent in his decision-making during the games. And that's one thing that's been a sort of like Achilles heel for him as a manager, because there are so many matches that could have been won, or at least, at the very least, not lost if he makes the right decisions at a quick enough pace. He didn't bring on Eriksen at 1-0 to kill the game on the counter, because let's be honest, if it's Eriksen driving those counters instead of Lamela or whoever it was, it's game over, because he's going to find Harry Kane, he's going to find Son Heung-min. He didn't do that. Number two, he waited way too long to bring on Lucas Moura. He brought him on in the 85th minute when we're already 2-1 down. That's unacceptable. This is a man who started and scored and was one of our best players against Olympiacos. If he's not starting the game, I can understand that, but you've got to be bringing him on as soon as possible in the second half if you're trying to chase the game. So that's strike number three. Strike number four, criminal, bringing on Wanyama. There is no business for Victor Wanyama in the Spurs team at all. At all. He shouldn't even be making the bench. This is a player that we tried to sell to Club Brugge, and for whatever reason, we couldn't sell him. Maybe they didn't want to pay the wages he wanted. Fair enough. But one thing is for certain. We saw it against Ajax in the Champions League in the second leg last year. He was well out of his depth. We saw it in the first leg again, well out of his depth. The guy is not good enough. He can't run. He can't press. Those are the two key fundamentals to playing in a Pochettino side. Even in our less press-intensive game, he's not good enough. He came on, immediately gave away the ball, and that led to the goal. Second half, the second goal scored by James Maddison. He's nowhere near Maddison. He doesn't even know where Maddison is. His job is the central defensive midfielder. It's literally your bread and butter to mark their number 10. That is your job. That's your remit for the pitch as soon as you come on. And he couldn't do that. Why is he there? It didn't make sense for me. And ultimately, little errors that our managers made has cost us this match. We can bitch and moan about the VAR, the Son missing his chance. But ultimately, if our manager makes the better decisions at a quick enough time, we don't lose that game. And we don't have this unwanted away record of not winning an away match since January. It's getting embarrassing now.
See, this is the thing. We've been saying about this on the show for a long time. Rodri isn't here to back me on this one. But we've always said that Pochettino, as great as he is as a man manager, his in-game management is shocking. It's almost as if he doesn't have a plan B. He knows a system that he wants to play. But when he's chasing a game, before, right, you had Llorente and he'd throw him on to lump the ball long, which every team does that, to be fair. But apart from that, what does he bring? I mean, he's done well to turn Spurs into a top four team. But the Champions League final, it's almost as if that's as far as he can take them.
I don't know. I disagree with that because we have seen in glimpses where he's actually made the right decision and it's worked in our favour. Like against Newcastle last year, for all the chances we were creating, he couldn't score. He brought on Llorente, like you said, but he switched Son from a sort of central position into coming out through the right. And as a result, it led to Son scoring a goal again in the Champions League against Ajax. Did the same thing, bringing on Llorente, putting Sissoko number 6 and just going hell for leather, playing Ali Eriksen and playing Son and Lucas Moura off Llorente. And it worked. So there's been instances where his in-game management has actually been the difference between a loss and win or progression to the next stage of the competition. But ultimately, it's a recurring theme that our manager just can't seem to shake off. But in regards to where he can actually take Spurs going forward, I don't think this is the highest he can take us. He hasn't won anything at Spurs. In his 5 or 6 years at the club, he hasn't won anything. So it's not ludicrous for me to think that in the season where we finally back him heavily in the window by signing 2 £60 million players potentially. I know obviously we're playing the rest of the Lo Celso fee next summer, but signing 2 £60 million players, signing one of the best young English talents available, it's not delusion for me to think that you can go that one step further. He's been in, what, 3 or 4 semi-finals in his time at Spurs. He's played in 2 finals and we haven't won. So I feel like these signings could be the difference between taking us from B to A. Do you get what I'm saying?
So, how long do you think he's got? Because, as you said, if you believe that they can go that one step further, let's just say they don't win anything again this season. Is that it for him? Because I'm already seeing people on social media, and I know, obviously, you can't really read too much into it, but I know a lot of football teams do, especially Man United, but I'm not going to go into that. But when you got a lot of unhappy fans going at a manager, something's going to wind someone up upstairs and say, right, all these people are saying this and that about him. There are some idiots that are running clubs that aren't really running them properly. Do you think Levy's people or someone there is having a word saying to him, look, people are starting to say, like, that this is all we can do. Like, maybe we should bring someone else in.
So I'll put it from 2 perspectives. So I think from Levy's perspective, I don't think Levy will have an issue with it at all. As long as Pochettino is getting Champions League football and that Champions League money is coming in, I don't think Levy's going to be too fussed about the trophies, because Champions League football means we're safe, we're secure, and it still gives him an opportunity to spend without having to overly spend, if that makes sense. But I personally think from a fan perspective, our fans, we do want trophies. Like, for me, I've said it already. If we don't, I expect us to finish third. based on what we spent, based on our squad quality, based on our manager. But if we don't win a trophy, for me, I'm going to consider this season a bit of a failure. It's not to say that I want Pochettino gone. I just think that in terms of his targets for the season, I don't think he will have achieved what he wanted to. He himself has even come out and said if he doesn't win a trophy this season, he considers it a failure. So it's clearly not something which the fans can feel. It's something that the manager himself wants to sort of bang home. But ultimately, I think his job, trophy or no trophy, is safe purely because of what he's done over the past couple of years under reduced budget, minimal players coming off the bench. Let's be real, he's worked miracles of our team. And I think for that reason only, he deserves another season, another two seasons without winning anything, as bad as that is to say.
So what's his remit then? Just Champions League football?
No, Champions League football and to win a trophy. If he can win it, but the thing is, we want to win a trophy, but like Daniel Levy's, the remit from Levy's perspective is, look, if you can win a trophy, that's good enough. But the key thing is getting into the top four. I don't think we're ever going to be in a position where Pochettino will be sacked from the Spurs job, unless it's something catastrophic, as in we're finishing maybe ninth or tenth spot. I don't think that's going to be possible. I don't think you'll see that happen. The only way you see Pochettino and Spurs part ways is if he leaves the club. And I truly believe that he might actually leave the club at the end of the season.
Mm. Okay, fair enough. KG, everyone is raving about James Maddison. And tonight I've seen a tweet from that anti-Semite saying that he's going to join Liverpool. How high do you rate him?
I mean, he's a different kind of player, man. Like, I don't rate a lot of players these days, man. I've got to be honest. A lot of them are, like, mediocre to poor, but you know, they get rated because it's the best of what we got right now. But he is a class player. I knew, like, even from when he was in the Championship with Norwich, you could see he was just too good for the league. So it didn't surprise me when he went on to the Prem. It was just surprising he was with Leicester. He reminds me a lot of like when Dele Alli was at MK Dons, where he's just so good that you can tell that he can make the step up. But with James Maddison, I think he's only going to get better.
Okay, as the song goes, Peng Ting called Madison. There you go.
I need him at Spurs.
Well, you've got Lo Celso now, you can't complain.
Well, that's it with James Maddison. I can see when like David Silva calls it a day at Man City, if they were to ever get him, he would slot so nicely into that team. You know, he would complement exactly what someone like David Silva would leave behind.
Mm. Yeah. The funny thing is...
Stop giving Pep ideas. don't you think they'd won the golden boy Phil Foden to build him up to be the player to sort of step into those boots?
Is Phil Foden that kind of player though?
Yeah, I think he is. He's a really talented footballer, and you just have to look at the game they played against Chelsea in the Community Shield. I think it was Chelsea in the Community Shield. Not this season, but last season when they won it 2-0, Foden was class. Like, he was just running rings through Chelsea's midfield. And I think this is a player who went into the FIFA under, I can't remember what age it was, and he got one of their players at the tournament. Like, he's clearly a talented player, but he needs a bit. So you wonder, with David Silva's leaving, are they going to reinvest into the team, or are they actually going to give this guy a clearer pathway to first team football?
I think if he doesn't get the spot, I think he'll be looking to leave, because he already said something about him, you know, wondering why he wasn't playing, even though Pep keeps on bigging him up, saying that he's a great player and this and that. But you see him for like 10, 15 minutes at best in the Premier League a game, so we don't know.
Yeah, it's a weird one, really. It's a proper weird one.
Mm. Watch this space, I guess. Another drab United performance. More injuries to add to the list. Ole can't catch a break, can he?
Boy, United. I don't even know you as a fan still how you're feeling, because it's just like,
oh come on! You had Graham Souness as a manager. You had Torben Pienaar at the back, for Christ's sake. Don't give me that. Don't tell me you haven't forgotten the Itzhak Zohar days and the Ronnie Rosenthal days.
I wasn't really wasn't a fan still, but yeah, there was a couple of duds, and he bought a lot of players on high wages, which left us in a state for when Roy Evans came in. But obviously then times there, I was in primary school, so obviously we won the FA Cup in 92, so then it's all about trophies. It's when you get older that you actually realise that, my team's fucked. You get what I'm saying? Because you start reading the game differently and looking for different things. But now United are a mess, and I was saying on our show on Saturday morning, because we had Coach Kojo from Free Midfield, that United are so boring. It's been like that since Fergie left. It's so boring. So if you're going to play slow the way that they do, the person that is the most creative, along with Pogba, but plays the game slowly, is Mata. So Doherty's 30-odd now. For me, he still has to play as much as possible.
Nah, he's tired.
But listen to what I'm saying.
I'm telling you right now, they could have 0.02 creativity in that team, and Wan Mata should still not be a starter. He is completely defunct for Man United now. He's not effective at all. You watched him yesterday. Every single time he got the ball, he was trying to pass backwards. He's Wan Mata. He's done. Like, he's completely finished. Finito. Done. He's done out here. Like, there's no way on earth he should be starting. It got to the point yesterday where Scott McTominay was the only source of ball progression from midfield in terms of carrying the ball and passing the ball from a Man United perspective, because Wan Mata was simply doing absolutely nothing. And Pereira, the less said, the better. Wan Mata, he's not good enough for United. They should have cut ties in the summer when they had the opportunity to let him go on a free transfer. Only God knows why they kept him on.
Well, they gave him a new contract. He's probably going to be writing a poetry corner on the official website.
That's the point that I'm making. In terms of what is there now, who instead should be starting ahead of him that will get some creativity? They look hopeless at times.
Well, that's their problem. Then.
And then he gets pinned on Pogba.
No. Let's be real. Man United, even if Pogba was playing a 20 out of 10 game, would still be rubbish, because he cannot account for the whole team. He can't do five or six players' jobs, which is what he's currently being asked to do. With Paul Pogba, in my opinion, I think that the criticism at times is harsh, but it's also warranted at times, because there are simply some games and cases where he's not doing the basics right. This is a guy who's meant to be, well, I don't think he's a world-class player. I think he's a quality player, but this is a guy who's meant to be heralded as a world-class player, world-class talent, and you're fumbling five-yard passes. You're being lackadaisical at the edge of your area. You're doing stupid things instead of retaining the ball properly. And I get that argument that there's no movement in these teams, so he's thinking more on the ball and he's dwelling more on the ball, but ultimately there are basic fundamentals you have as a football player that he struggles to do at times, and that is why he gets criticism. But ultimately, the Man United board have themselves and themselves only to blame for the lack of creativity. I think once Paul Pogba is back fit, their best bet is a midfield trio of McTominay, Fred and Paul Pogba. That needs to be their starting midfield, because the rest of them are not cutting it at all. Mata, again, completely washed. Like, he needs to be back playing football either in Serbia or the MLS or China or something like that. He ain't good enough for the Premier League anymore. And Pereira, he's a championship player. He's clearly a championship player. I don't know what business he has at a top six club or even a Premier League club. So for me, it's simple. You play McTominay, you play Fred, and you play Paul Pogba. And you play Paul Pogba further up the pitch where he can actually do damage, because all of this business, dropping him back deeper, a couple yards to help spark up the transition, it's at your detriment, because when teams are standing off you, it's like Paul Pogba is having to influence the game from basically his own box. It's crazy.
The thing is, I find it remarkably ironic that Jose Mourinho was right about everything at the club. Everything he said was bang on. To Rashford not being a centre-forward, and I don't know if you remember that interview he had, and people were saying, he goes, people keep saying to me, why Lukaku? Why don't you play this one? He goes, well, here you go. This is why. And he was talking about Marcus Rashford. But what frustrated me the most about this weekend, forget the result. When, Toby, you stepped on a wonderful point there about doing the basics, right? The basics, moving into pockets of space, whether it be in the final third or in the middle of the park, the players weren't doing it. Try win the second ball. I counted 15 times in the second half that United were second to every second ball. West Ham, it wasn't the fact that West Ham wanted it more. It's that United just weren't good enough.
Yep,
little
agreed.
Things here and there, you know, your sideward passes. I get it. You know, if you want to have a possession game, make sure that there's movement in front of you. So at least you got an outlet. But we weren't even doing that. And it just frustrates me because, look, I'm not Jesse Lingard's biggest fan. But sad to say this, he's the only outlet that we've got. He's the only one that makes the runs. He's the only one that gets into the pockets of space. And it infuriates me because I know that we have some decent players. But decent isn't good enough. I'm sorry.
Do you really have decent players, though?
Well, I think Daniel James is a decent player. I think he's a decent player.
That's one. So you have Daniel James.
Wan-Bissaka's a good player. I think he's a decent player.
I think, thought you were talking midfield and attack.
Well, no, I'm just talking in general.
No, I'm just talking in general. Okay.
You know, but like I said...
But the squad's still not good enough, though.
Of course not. But I've been saying this since we last won the title. When we won the title, I said, that's an average squad that won the title. And we only won the title because Man City were in disarray, you know, and Van Persie was banging in goals. We were relying on Valencia as our right back. He was our right back for, what, 6 years?
It's ridiculous. What
style? But you also had Fergie there. And he could get average players to perform. And what you've got now, I mean, they're average players, but they're not performing at all. You could put these players in a Everton kit and you wouldn't think it any different.
No, I agree. Nah. I agree. Nah, and I'm hearing that they've made contact with Allegri.
I disagree. Sort of. I think with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, your club shafted him big time because he's not a talented coach by any means, but he did a good enough job, in my opinion, to warrant getting the job permanently. You may disagree with that, but I think he did enough to warrant getting the job permanently, to at least say, you know what, let's give him a try. It's clear to see that towards the end of the season, there were players that were not good enough for your team and that you needed to... He was even coming out in the press and saying, you need to make it clear, right, there's going to be changes, there's going to be this, that and the other. You got rid of the deadwood for him, but you didn't bring him any players in. And like we said now, he's no Ferguson or Klopp. He's not someone who's gonna get blood out of a stone. So that's not Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So he actually needs tools. He actually needs tools to play the way he wants to play. He wants to play high pressing, quick zippy zappy football, and you got pedestrian players or players who lack so much technical ability or energy or even stamina that his game that he wants to implement in your team is effectively null and void. So it's literally like now you're putting yourself in a position where you haven't got a manager whose coaching will be enough to see you through the rut, and you haven't got a squad whose natural just raw ability is going to be able to see you through the rut as well. So again, whose fault is it to blame here for both these issues?
Well, Ali's got a bad poker face too. You know, he says these things. He was saying stuff after the game, like he believes that they've got the character and stuff. But you can see he doesn't believe one bit of it. You know, but he has to say it because it's what he's got to work with.
He's a yes man, isn't it? So obviously he's going to come out in the press. He's going to smile and he's going to say, yes, I believe this, I believe that. When in truth, he can see the writing on the wall that the squad is a pile of poo. It's terrible.
Of course. And D, I don't know if you remember when I came on your show a while back, I was saying, well... He got the job, interim level. And I was saying, watch what happens when United get their first serious defeat. And we lost against Paris Saint-Germain and we bounced back. Then he got the job permanently against Watford.
Yeah.
And then we lost against Arsenal. And that's when it all went downhill. And I called it, the moment he gets that job full time, just watch them all, you know, just capitulate like dominoes. It's going to fall down, right? And it's continued. And we've got 4 wins in 20 games. Now, I'm not trying to be funny, but De Boer got sacked after 7 games without a bloody win for Crystal Palace, right? Yeah. Solskjaer is kind of... He's like the bulletproof vest for the owners and Woodward at the moment, right? And it was very clever for them to bring this guy in because obviously you're going to get a lot of the fans on side. They bring a club legend, yada, 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 blah, blah. But the fact is, he's underqualified, right? He's not good enough for the job. And it's a shame to say this, but... If and when he goes, or should I say when he goes, because I don't even think he'll be here Christmas time, to be fair. The next person that comes in, right, he's got a pile of shit to work with. So how many fucking windows do you need to get this thing right. You can't get it right because of the owners and because of Ed Woodward. And I'm sure you guys saw what happened with Phil Jones and Woodward.
Yep, I did.
That sums it all up, doesn't it? Phil Jones is out of favour. No one wants him. And yet he's saying, sacked in the morning. And Woodward is like, oh, we're on camera. Stop it. Come on.
And that's the problem with your team. The fact that Ed Woodward is just brushing that off. Or the better yet, the fact that he's even sat there in the stands to even make such a comment. He shouldn't even be a Man United player anymore. That's down to Ed Woodward and the mismanagement of your players, of your transfer budget, of just your club strategy going forward. It's pathetic. And the thing is, Ollie's going to be the fool guy. We know he's not good enough. We know he's not done a good enough job since he's been permanently appointed. But who's to say the next manager who comes in is going to do any better? He may have a bit more ideas in terms of coaching, in terms of tactics, but ultimately they can only do so much because the problem is systemic at the top level with Ed Woodward. Until he is aligned with your manager in their ideas and he's going to back them 100% and he's going to be braver with regards to bringing players in and getting rid of certain players, you're never going to get back to the heights you were before.
The club of Manchester United, they love offering contracts to players that should be going.
Ridiculous.
Like Chris Smalling and Phil Jones and all them guys should have been gone. But instead now, you got Chris Smalling out on loan where he could have just left on a free. You wouldn't have thought nothing of it.
Yeah, KG, you know? But you know what they're thinking was? It's like what they did with Fellaini. They gave him a new contract and they sold him a month later thinking, well, you know, by signing a new contract, it bumps up his value a bit. And that's what they thought with Jones and Smalling, that they sign a new contract and then they can sell them because they would have lost them for nothing. But here we go. Phil Jones is sat in the stands on like 80 grand a week, which is...
Yeah, but Sunderland are in League One now, so they're not going to take your bad players no more.
You know?
Well, Newcastle don't invest, and Everton have moved on now. They've moved on to bigger fish. So,
well, I don't know. Everton wanted Rojo. They wanted Rojo.
Who's running the trap? Marcel Brands needs to be hung. Like, it's ridiculous. The amount of terrible buys that he's influenced now, Everton, and that would have been another one there. 25 million for Marcus Rojo. Has he lost his marbles?
Yeah. Well, we'll go into Everton in just a bit, but let's talk about West Ham, KG, because we can't ignore their performance. I mean, regardless how bad United were, I think Pellegrini has assembled a very, very exciting team, and he's kind of gone under the radar, hasn't he?
West Ham's team is all right. And what I mean by that is they don't have any like star players now. You know, when they had Payet and, you know, even to a certain extent, Arnautovic, they've just got a good team. But they do this a lot, don't they? They have a good run, but then they'll have two or three really bad runs that will set them back into mid-table. And they also have this habit of buying these foreign strikers that never work out in the long run. Haller, he's doing all right at the minute, but we'll see what he's like in about 15 games, if he's still playing well, if he's still even playing. You know, Yarmolenko looks good. You know, Declan Rice, solid. But we'll see what they're like, because West Ham do this all the time. They might end up 10th, 11th again. So
they do, but I really think that second season in now, better buys in the window, with the exception of four nows. I thought he was going to be decent, but he's looked shocking. He's looked shocking the times I've watched him play for West Ham, but maybe he's still better than me. But I genuinely think after Leicester, they can be sort of like the next best team in terms of the best of the rest. I think I disagree with Haller. I think that this is a striker who plundered in 20 plus goals last year for Frankfurt. This is a striker who's not only good in the air, but he's also a good finisher. He's got quick feet for a big guy, and he's good at bringing people into play. So whether West Ham want to play it long or whether West Ham want to play it into feet, I think he's perfect for both types of games. And also, I think the supporting cast behind him, if they can keep Lanzini fit, you have Anderson, Lanzini and Yarmolenko. That's a front three that betters Leicester's attacking front three, that betters Watford's attacking front three, that betters Bournemouth's attacking front three, that betters Everton's attacking front three. That's a good enough front three for them to even possibly challenge Leicester. And they got the manager to do it as well. So I think if they can keep players fit and they can actually maintain some consistency, because like you said...
Consistency.
Everything is right. You're spot on there. The West Ham are the type to win like 3-4 games in a spin. Then they'll randomly lose a game at home. Then they'll lose another two. And then they'll win one, then lose one. Like, they need to just maintain some level of consistency over the season. And that should see them to at least challenging for that seventh spot.
But yeah. I think the future is bright for West Ham. And I don't even think they played that well against United.
Neither do I.
Two moments of individual quality, and that was it. It was crazy. Mark Noble was probably the best player by a country mile, and that's an indictment of Man United as a whole, because although he's been playing well this season, you're telling me none of the Man United midfielders can get close to Mark Noble. Yeah. A 30-something-year-old Mark Noble, come on.
Yeah. But that just goes to show you how bad United are, that West Ham didn't really do much, and they were comfortable in the end. Apart from that chance that Matt missed, they were quite comfortable. But as you're saying, the key word that you mentioned there, there's everything you said about West Ham was true, but the key word that you mentioned there out of everything that you said was consistency. They're away to Bournemouth this weekend. They'll probably go to Bournemouth and get beat 4-0. And that's the problem. Yeah. That's the problem with them. If they maintain a level of consistency, then outside of the top four, now Rafa Benitez is in China, they have the best manager or the best CV of any manager outside of the top four in Pellegrini. So therefore, they should be able to push on, and they've got good players there, so we'll see what they can do. But it's just the mentality building. They need a good cup run or something like that. They always seem to go out of the cups quite early, and I think that they can do this.
They got a good squad, but they've got a fantastic goalkeeper, Fabianski.
Tough quality guy. He looks a completely different person from the man that is at
Arsenal. He really does. So solid
in between the six, man.
The ghost.
How the Arsenal goalkeepers who were formerly rubbish and completely shit. One of them is now putting that flipping old head Buffon on the bench at Juventus, and the other one is actually one of the best keepers in the league at West Ham. He really is quite clutch for West Ham, isn't he?
See what happens when the ghost of Jens Lehmann isn't about. Toby, Watford's new manager bounce didn't last long, did it? Can we read too much into City's 8-0 win, though? I mean, they're still ropey at the back.
I mean, we can, because we all expected Man City to come back with a vengeance after that uncharacteristic 3-2 loss to Norwich. But I think that if you were looking for an indication of how City are going to cope at the back, I do not think that is the game to watch, because apart from one opportunity where Delafoe literally beat Otamendi, who can't seem to stop going down, he goes down quicker than a flipping escort on a Tuesday night, man, it's crazy. He loves going down. Barring that, I do not think they were tested at all from Watford. So I don't think that's the game to see whether whether Man City can cope at the back. But I genuinely think they can supplement that loss. Fernandinho's slotted back in there. Eric Garcia got a few minutes at centre-back towards the end. I think they have enough, provided John Stones and Otamendi do not play together regularly. I think they have enough to sort of see themselves through to a position where Laporte can be back into the team. If they can get Laporte back into the team for the run-in and just protect the defence as much as possible, which I think Pep will do to some extent in the way he sets up the team, I think they'll be fine.
Fantastic. Right, our next games have a bit of an Arabic theme. Yalla! At the rich Arabic airline stadium, 10-man Arsenal came back from behind twice to beat Aston Villa 3-2, while Sheffield United, now part-owned by a Saudi prince, beat Everton 2-0 despite only having one shot on target. Now, Unai Emery said the team was amazing, but they still need to improve at the back. That's something he's explained very well. Coming back to win with 10 men does show a bit of balls, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. As Brendan Rodgers always says, I thought the team showed great character. and I must be honest, I was shit off. Obviously, I don't know. Well, I know Stel does if you guys play FPL as well, but I've got McGinn and Wesley in my fantasy team, so I'm there cheering them on while I'm watching Liverpool and Chelsea. But I just knew with 10 men that they'd bottle it. But as Arsenal come under the cap of teams I hate, I didn't want to put money on it to back them. But they did well. Obviously, there was a penalty and a free kick in there, but Guendouzi did his thing second half. And Dean Smith, I like him, but at the same time, I think that they're a little naive, and they're one of them teams, just like I think with Daniel Farke at Norwich.
they don't. These teams know how to play attractive football, but they don't know how to shut up shop. And this is what, though they're entertaining to watch, I don't know if that is going to keep those three teams up as well, because Sheffield United like to play a bit as well, but it looks like they've got, Chris Wilder's got a bit more of nous tactically than the other two. But now Arsenal did well. I have to give them credit, because I'm the first person to talk about their lack of character, especially mentality. They were disgraceful against Watford second half, considering they led 2-0. And I know it's frustrating for Arsenal fans, because one thing was, before, when they played under Wenger, they were attacking. So when they lost, you said, oh, you just came out and you said they were naive, the defending was poor. But now they're giving up possession more to the opposition and they're still getting similar results. So the fans, as if Arsenal Fan TV wasn't entertaining enough, got even more entertaining, because now after forcing Wenger out, now some of them are switching on Emery. But he just needs to know what his right formation is, because he switches it around too much. But I do think when they get Tierney and Bellerin fit, you will see a different Arsenal. I don't think any of them are exceptional defensively, but in terms of the attacking style, they will give them the width. And one thing Stel was just talking about last season was they would just cut the ball back into the box from the byline. It looks incredibly simple, but it's complex of busy. They got a lot of goals from there, and then the likes of Mbappe and Lacazette, they would clean up and get their goals. But fourth is there for Arsenal if they want it, but I don't know how badly they want it, because it's just confused. They're so bipolar.
It's their manager, man. The manager's not. He's not giving them any positive indication that he's going to utilise that squad well enough. And if he's not careful, and to be honest, if Tottenham aren't careful, we both keep going at the rate we're going, teams like Chelsea will steal a march, because Chelsea are actually looking relatively well despite their leaky defence. And like you said, fourth is there for Arsenal to seize, but will Emery seize it with that team?
No. I don't think so, man. I think
he's the man for the job.
I don't think he's good for Arsenal, no. I don't think they've improved since Wenger left. You know, they did well against Villa, but they are still that weak-looking team. Yeah, whereas I remember the Arsenal, you know, I'm sure we all remember where they had Vieira, Gilberto Silva, all these guys. It's complete night and day. You know, they're just so weak. Once they concede, they concede again. That defence is so weak.
Well, they're pinning their hopes on Guendouzi a lot, aren't they? Because he had a pretty decent game the other day, but you know, it's almost as if they've made him out to be their future captain, and I wouldn't rely on him to be pulling you out of the mire. Look, granted, you know, they've got Aubameyang that will get them 20 plus goals a season. I honestly believe that once Bellerin and Tierney come back in the team, there will be a much more stable outfit. And by that I mean, he relies a lot on attacking fullbacks, and they don't have that. Maitland-Niles isn't a fullback. And the other guy, Kolasinac, they call him the tank. Well, he moves like a tank, doesn't he? So, you know, I just think that once they get those fullbacks in, then you'll see a much more direct Arsenal. But again, defensively, man, when you got Socrates and Luis there, you're always going to concede goals, man.
I was going to say Socrates is terrible. And you know what? He got saved by he got saved by VAR, man, because that was handball.
Such a mug. This is what I mean about VAR. Why does it not get to review subjective decisions? Whoever that is in West London, why are you not phoning up your buddy and saying, hey, look, one of the players has just used their arm to block the ball. That should be a penalty. Why isn't VAR being used for these things? Is it a case of it not being allowed to review these things? Or is it just a case of the referees just showing incredible bias towards their counterparts? I don't understand it.
Ding.
Yes.
Yeah, they are showing minimal bias because they don't want to make them look bad by overruling, because they're trying to make this thing about being clear and obvious error, and that's overshadowing the fact of whether or not the decision should be made or not. Because, come on, someone did this decision.
That's stupid, though.
That was a penalty.
That's what I'm saying.
It was a penalty.
Let's just pretend that these referees don't know each other. They're just random average Joes who don't know each other at all. Ultimately, VAR has been put in place to help these referees. fair enough, we know that sometimes they make errors, but ultimately, because the game is so fast-paced, there are certain things that they're not going to be able to see that are going on during the course of the 90 minutes. And something like that happening, that's robbed Aston Villa. That's potentially robbed Aston Villa 3 points. I mean, well, it was awful.
It could have been six, Toby. It could have been six. Yeah. Because remember, there was Crystal Palace the other week as well.
Yeah.
So, like, you're against Crystal Palace the other week. These are scandalous decisions, and these are the differences between staying up and being relegated. I can't remember what the gap was for Cardiff last year in terms of staying up and being relegated, but imagine if Cardiff got those 3 points that they rightfully should have got against Leicester towards the end of the season when that Aspilicueta offside goal was given and so on and so forth. Imagine what a difference that would have made to their season.
Cardiff had a bag of decisions go against them, but just in that game. They had like three or four games. But I don't care about Warnock, so...
Good old quality. Same here.
The point still stands. VAR is here for to clear and obvious decisions, but it's also here to help the referees as well. And they need to start using it properly.
Yeah, absolutely.
VAR at the minute is just helping out defenders left, right and centre. It's just stifling attackers, but it's giving defenders. Like defenders are defending 80%, then relying on VAR for the rest. Because at the moment, it's just getting defenders out of sticky situations. Yeah. You know, if that handball was an attacking player for Villa and then somebody else tucks it in, they would have disallowed it because the attacking player, it hit their hand.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
No, you're right. Well, Toby, you spoke about Everton earlier. They've spent close to $200 million since 2016, yet they haven't improved at all. How long do you think Marcus Silva has before he gets his P45?
Not long at all, I gotta say. How many games did Ronald Koeman last? What, probably seven games, wasn't it?
Something, yeah.
I can't remember. I can't remember how many games, but I don't think he's got long left. I think Moshiri and co, they're very ambitious and they're pumping. They're investing a lot of money into this team, and they're just not seeing any reasonable return on their investment. They're not seeing this team that are consistent throughout the course of the season. They're seeing a team that are just about getting to eighth spot in the league. They're seeing a team that are not making any sort of like progress in the cup competitions as well. Like, I mean, the other day, they went life and death with Lincoln, and in all likelihood, they're probably going to get dumped out in this week's round of League Cup games as well. So they're not seeing any fruitful runs in the cup competitions, and they're not seeing any steady consistency over the course of the season. So ultimately, they're going to ask themselves, what's this money I'm investing going towards? What is it going towards?
Big wages and underperforming players. Pretty much it, really.
My whole thing with their club is, and this is what I was mentioning earlier, I'm not sure what the hierarchy is like, because is Marcel Brands, does he get full autonomy of the transfers? Like, does he determine who they're going to bring in, and Marcus Silva just has to say, yep, I'm going to have to take this guy? Like, does Marcus Silva get a say in the transfers? Because their buyers have been shockingly inconsistent over the years, even this summer as well. $40 million on Iwobi. He's not even better than Harry Wilson. He's not even better than Harry Wilson, who's on loan at flipping Bournemouth, and you're spending $40 million on him. It's not good enough. It's not good enough at all. Their centre-backs were weak. They needed to get a new centre-back. They tried to get Kurt Zouma. They couldn't get him. And they're trying to get Marcus Rojo. Are you serious? Is that really the best use of your money? They signed Sidibe at right-back. Fair enough. But ultimately, the quality end-to-end within their team is just not good enough. They signed Fabian Delph for $8 million. Yeah, Delph will probably come in and put in a shift here and there. But again, where are you trying to take this club to long term? Because your transfer buys do not match up with any sort of idea that you're going to progress over the next couple of years. It's either one step forward and two steps back for them. It doesn't make sense.
Well, KG, I'm sure you know all about Sheffield United. What do you make of their start to the season, mate?
Solid. They're a good defensive, organised team. You know, they don't have any stars. Yeah, and they've barely got players really that should be in the Prem. But you got to give Chris Wilder a lot of credit, man. He's so good at getting the best out of players. He did it last year in the Championship, and he's doing it again this year in the Prem. I think they'll be all right this year. I think they can make it last this season, and I think they'll stay up, because I just think that there's so many other poorer teams than them in the league this year.
I don't know, you know. I think they're going down. I like Chris Wilder. I like how they play their own style of football, but I think they're going down.
I think that's, like, you hit the nail on the head there initially. Then there are not many players who will make it into other Premier League sides. I just think this one will rear its ugly head towards the latter stages of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that happening too. I'm not saying that they'll definitely stay up, but if they can continue with the spirit that they've got with the manager and operating in his system as they do now, then they might be okay. Just because of the quality of some of the teams at the bottom of the league. I mean, like, they got players like Chris Basham and Ender Stevens. I mean, you'd never see these guys in the Premier League without Sheffield United. Yeah. And who knows in the long term, because they do have trouble finishing chances too. But like at Everton, they just sat back and sat back and then hit them on the counter. And it was like one goal. It was right, isn't it? It's one goal, two goals.
Yeah, one shot on target, two goals.
Yeah, crazy. Crazy. And that is probably how they're going to get a lot of their points.
Yeah.
But that's the problem in itself, because how many teams are going to be as wasteful as Everton with the ball? If you give as many teams as you give a lot of teams as much of the ball as you gave Everton, they're going to punish you much harder than Everton did.
Mm. So, but the thing is, yeah, there's more teams like Newcastle, Watford, Palace and all these other like mediocre teams that I think that they can probably do it against. If they tried what they did against Everton, against Liverpool, Man City, then it's game over. But yeah. I don't know, man. We'll see how it goes. They need to have a bit more clinical finishing up front, though, if they're going to stay up.
Yeah, I think Ollie McBeany, from what I've read, he looks a good player. Well, he looks a good player for them.
No, he hasn't been good, man.
No, I'm saying on paper he looks a good player for them to have, but I don't know whether he's someone who's actually going to bang in the goals, because I know he tore the championship to shreds last year. But like I said, it remains to be seen whether he's going to tuck away the chances.
Now, if they've got any chance of getting goals, it will be out of Mousset, who they got from Bournemouth.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so, man, because he's got pace and he can finish. But McBurney, unless he's scoring, you don't notice him.
I've heard the opposite, you know. I've heard he's literally like the jack of all trades, that he works his socks off. He can play, he can put people in on goal. He's sort of like, from what I've read and heard, he's like Sheffield United's version of Bobby Firmino, in the sense that he can do the lot.
No, I think
that's what I'm afraid.
No. If you're going to compare somebody to that, it would be Callum Robinson at the minute. He's the one that's doing all the running and getting people involved. McBurney at the minute, if he's not on the score sheet, you're seriously not noticing him. David McGoldrick, who they've also got. I mean, again, this guy shouldn't be in the Premier League, but you know, here we are.
He's just a workhorse, and he misses. Every time I watch him, he's just missing chance after chance, man.
Misses a hell of a lot of chances, and that's what was frustrating them. Because they played well against Southampton, but they lost 1-0 because they just couldn't finish any of their chances.
Yep, I remember.
There you go. Right, gents, before we go on to our European news, shall I play a quick game?
Sure.
Okay. Go for it. Right. It's called Guess Who. Now, I don't know if you guys know how to play. What I've done, I've thought of a current Premier League footballer. You need to guess who he is, but I'll give you some clues. And the clues are players he has either played alongside, past and present. Yeah?
I hate these.
Good, right.
Okay, right. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll give you three clues first, okay? Clue number one is Joe Cole. Clue number two, Tammy Abraham. And clue number three, John Terry. So this guy, current Premier League player, has played alongside those three players.
Jack Grealish?
Oh, he's got it in one. Jesus Christ.
That's good. I thought it was going to be tougher than that, so I'm setting the brain to
think
of some guy who's meant to go in first game.
Yeah. He just broke a record there. He
played all three of them at Villa, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. Shall I give you the other clues, just to let you know? Just to let you know how long he's been playing for Aston Villa. Darren Bent, Fabian Delph, Ryan Bertrand, Philip Senderos, Tom Cleverley, Scott Sinclair, Shay Given, Mika Richards, Idrissa Garner-Gay. Played with him as well.
I see what you're trying to do there. You were going with the
the easy ones first, and then you were going to give us names that would confuse us. But because he's got it early, he's defeated the reverse psychology.
Precisely. Cage's been listening to the show long enough to know how I work. I was gonna add some music to it in the background, but there's no point now, so fuck that bit of editing. Brilliant. You saved me a few minutes. Cheers, KG.
Sorry, man.
No, it's all good. So let's go to our European roundup. But I tell you what, before we do that, I've just seen a tweet from Simon Edwards, who's a really, really good friend of the show's, and he's currently in Colombia. And he's put out this tweet. In the Ecuadorian second division, Deportivo La Paz were 3 points behind Deportivo Quevedo with one game remaining. Their goal difference was 18 goals worse than Quevedo, as they faced already eliminated Carlos Bobo. Anyone want to guess what the scoreline was between La Paz and...
19-0.
19, yeah.
Ooh, very close.
It what?
25-0.
Oh, my days. Come on, man.
That's terrible.
Yes. Anyway, apparently the opposition, they travelled with 14 players and no backup goalkeeper, and they finished the game with 7 players. Yes, there you go. Anyway, so in other news, Luis Suarez told Spanish publication AS that Barca have a tough year ahead following their second defeat of the season. Now, Toby, it looks like the golden era of Barca is actually on its last legs. They're 4 points behind league leaders Athletic Bilbao. Is it too soon to write them off?
Definitely too soon. It's only been, four games. Messi's only just recently come back from injury as well. Agreed, Valverde may not be the man to take them forward long term in the big competition, which is the biggest competition, which is the Champions League. But I believe in the league, the squad's simply too talented for them to not win La Liga. I would back them as my favourites to win La Liga again this year. Mainly because of the Messi factor as well.
There you go.
So I'm not writing them off at all.
Mm-hmm. Write them off at your peril. KG, Romelu Lukaku scored in Inter's 2-0 win over Milan, making it 4 wins from 4 for Conte's men. Is this the year Inter win their first Scudetto since 2010?
Yes. No.
No?
No. It's Juventus still, man. Juventus have just got a better team overall. And Inter are nice, but they haven't dropped no points yet, and they will do. But Juventus, they're like a wounded animal whenever they drop points. So I don't see anybody but Juventus winning the Italian league at this stage. Not while they got peak Ronaldo still, you know, he's still the best. Regardless of whatever the FIFA award said tonight, you know, they've still got the best player. And they've just got better squad depth overall.
Okay, fair enough. So you think that Aaron Ramsey's going to get a first title winner's medal?
I think he's going to do it this year. I think that's the only reason why he went to Juventus. Obviously for the challenge, but he knows that he's probably going to get a title with that team.
Okay. Diano, you love your Serie A. What do you reckon?
Though I know Neymar is highly pessimistic about it, I actually think under Conte, I think that Inter could do it. They could.
I would love for Inter to do it.
I think Juve are targeting the Champions League. Same way I think that Atleti, the last two results have been dodgy, a defeat and a draw, but I think that Atleti can win La Liga.
I mean, I'm not going to lie, I've always had a bit of a hard-on for Inter, especially back in the 90s when they had Bremer, Klinsmann and Mateus. I was one of the guys at school that liked that trio, whereas others were like, oh yeah, we want Van Basten, Hullet and Rijkaard. No, I'll stick with the Germans, mate.
I've been an Inter man from young as well, since Italian football, 92? Since Italian football started on Channel 4, I've been an Inter man.
There you go.
I like Inter. Obviously, you man have got a couple more years on me, but I would say back in my childhood days, Inter, their purple patch during probably, I think it was like 2005, 2006 onwards, when they had Adriano, Martins, they even had Vieri at one point a couple years before. Inter were definitely one of my favourite teams, and they had Reco Bar, Dejan Stankovic, like they had a couple ballers in that team.
Yeah, back in the day for me, it was Parma when they had Turan, Buffon, Cannavaro, all the players, man.
Yeah, he was some gems.
Crespo up front in Pete Crespo era, man. He was beautiful, man.
Sartor, Varane, Dino Baggio.
Oh, man. Damn.
Yeah.
What a team.
So guys, if you get a chance, go on YouTube and just look for 90s goals in Serie A. You're going to see some gems, man. I mean, Christ, there was a player called Ruben Sosa.
And that left foot was,
well, you talk about a wand of a left foot. That left foot was a rocket, honestly. It just, everything he hit, it was like 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, Serie A back in the day was I used to watch that more frequent than anything. Like when they had, Juventus had Nedved and all these guys. I mean, the league was just irresistible back then. So many world-class players.
Alvaro Recoupment's debut for Inter when he come off the bench and scored two from outside the box.
Yeah. I mean, I remember that 94 European Cup win from Milan when they played Barca in the final and everyone was saying Stoichkov and Romario, this and that, yada, yada, yada. And then up steps, you know, your Boban, your Savicevic's and all these other players who are just,
different gravy,
man.
Slapping 4-0.
I mean, Christ, they signed Jean-Pierre Papin and he couldn't get in the team. That's how elite they were. Sorry, Toby. You know, showing our ages, you know.
But do you remember when Roma didn't win the league and they signed Batshuayi at 32 for 22 mil,
yeah,
and he got in the league? That's how good, like, Tati, Montella, Batshuayi, that front three at the time.
Who was their head coach at the time?
Capello,
yeah. The guy that wasn't good enough for England, right? Yeah. Okay. Let's not go into that. D, Rod's mate Neymar got another winner for ISIS SG, this time against Lyon. As you know, his boss Thomas Tuchel said he's 100% with us. He laughs, he's reliable, he's completely there with his teammates. Question is, mate, how long will he be reliable? The transfer window reopens in a little under 4 months. Will his sister keep him laughing?
He'll go on the first day of January. In fact, the deal will be done in December, like what we did with Van Dijk at the end of 2017, and then he will go in the first week of the window, because I watched Lyon and Paris Saint-Germain yesterday. It was a shit game, so unfortunately I can't get that 90 minutes back of my life, and then I had Sevilla and Real Madrid on the lap, and he was just getting it, and he went to go take corners, and they were throwing stuff at him.
I heard about this.
Yeah. Oh my God, he's off.
But the thing is, you say he's off, but they're going to have to register him for the Champions League. And isn't he going to be cup tied in January? Because I know you can play for both a Europa League team and a Champions League team now in the same seasons. But I don't think you can do it for Champions League and Champions League.
Yeah, so, you're right.
So how's that going to work then?
They'll still do it. It's just like when Barca got Coutinho. Coutinho had already played the Champions League for Liverpool. They still got him. That won't faze them. That won't faze them at all. They'll still take him. But a wonderful goal to win it. Lovely turn and finish. Obviously, that overhead kick the other day, wonderful turn and finish as well to win late. But he's had enough. I went to, at the end of 2017, me and D-Man, my partner that does from the D&D Football Factory, went to a night with Guillaume Balaguer, Gabriel Marcotti and Raphael Honigstein. And Guillaume said from then, Neymar wanted it out. He said that he knew it would be a step down to France, but he said he didn't know how bad Liga 1 was, and still we started playing in it. And then it's the same thing I used to say to people. I used to work in a supermarket, and I used to tell them that unless you're actually working, you won't realise actually how badly this place is run. He got in there, I'm not sure if he's necessarily adapted to the culture and that, although he spends a lot of time outside of France anyway, but he wants out, and I think it's only a matter of time that they can block him from getting the move that he wants, to be perfectly honest. But I think he'll be off.
The thing is, a couple of years back, we were saying that Celtic is like managerial rehab. So any manager that's got a shit reputation, they go to Celtic to build themselves up and they get another job. Paris Saint-Germain is like footballer rehab, isn't it? Where if your career is kind of like, you know, teetering on the edge, you go to Paris Saint-Germain and you boost yourself. Look at Di Maria, look at Icardi, look at David Luiz, look at all these other players that have gone there where you think, you know, they weren't kind of wanted by their club. And then they just fucked off to PSG and they made something of themselves. Neymar's not in that bracket because he's an elite footballer. But sidetracking a little bit, Neymar is obviously one of the big names at the moment. I will never see him until he wins a World Cup, or unless he does something miraculous. I will never see him up there with the likes of Ronaldinho, Rivaldo, Ronaldo, Romario. What do you guys make of him?
He's not there yet, but he's a legend. He's a legend in his own right. Even if he doesn't win that Ballon d'Or, I feel like Neymar, if he's not in their bracket, he is the closest thing to that caliber of player in this generation of Brazilian players, because if we look at the players that have come through over the years, even Kaká to a certain extent, Kaká fell off, man. He went to Madrid and he fell off. Yeah, do you get what I'm saying? Adriano, he fell off. All of these talented Brazilian players, none of them have had the longevity. Neymar was highly spoken about at 17, 18 years old. He's been putting Brazil on his back since he was 18, 19 years old. He's won the Champions League. He's been putting up ridiculous numbers in Europe season after season. I think when it's all said and done, he will be a legend in his own right, in my opinion. It won't be a case of, oh, he has to be considered to Ronaldinho, because obviously those men did unique things during their period of time. But I feel like Neymar will be, as I said, a legend in his own right.
Okay. KG, what do you reckon? Is he going to be up there one day?
Yeah, I think so, man. I like Neymar a lot. I know a lot of people, you know, think he's a bit of a diver, or, you know, a bit goes over a bit easy. But, man, when he's on it, he's on it. But you can tell right now he's not happy and he needs to go back to Barca, and you'll probably see the best of him again. He will need to wait for Messi and Ronaldo to retire before he gets that Ballon d'Or, though, because as good as his numbers are, they aren't that level. You know, Messi and Ronaldo are just by themselves. You know, you can't really put anybody else in there. But yeah, he's a Brazilian legend in my eyes anyway, yeah.
Okay. Dee, do you want to add to that? I think Dee's gone.
Wait, no, Dee, the guys have mostly said it, to be honest. He's a quality player, but I'm not having him in the same bracket as the Ronaldos, the Ronaldinhos, the Rivaldos just yet. But he's quality, because when you look at it, his whole time at Brazil, from a teenager, he's been doing bits. I remember when they smashed Spain in the Confederations Cup and whatnot, and to win that. Since he's been a teenager, he's been outstanding for them, and he's been a bona fide winger as well. Up front, he's never played in the centre for them. He generally, like, hogs the line for them. In his time playing for Brazil, Luis Fabiano, Fred, Hulk, all these different people, Leandro Damia, all these different guys have played in the centre, and he's been out wide, and his international goal scoring record is insane. So he will go down. It's just young football Twitter that's trying to replace him over the likes of Ronaldinho and that right now. But Neymar, in his own right, is quality, and I don't have all this nonsense people say, the ones that don't like him, that say things like, he rolls around on the ground, he does this and he does that. He's still a quality player. People used to do the same thing with Busquets. Busquets, one of the best central midfielders there's been in the last 10 years. People will say things, he play acts and rolls on the floor, and all this nonsense. That's got nothing to do with the actual football that he is playing, when we're talking about how technically good the player is, you know. But no, Neymar is quality, man. But as you said, until Messi and Ronaldo get out there, he's not going to get the props, or the trophy. He does get the props, but he's not going to get the trophies to back it.
Yeah.
My last point in Neymar, I think with Neymar, he's a victim of Brazil's aggressive progress in the past probably 3 or 4 years, because he made his name, like you said, he made his name primarily in a period where Brazilian football was on the decline in terms of the talent that they were bringing out. So obviously, when he came out from Brazil, everyone's like, yeah, he's a talented kid, and so on and so forth. But yeah, like, he's shining because the Brazilian team are in their lowest that they've been in a couple of years now. And then obviously, fast forward to last summer when they won the Copa America, people are like, look, Brazil can win the Copa America without Neymar. I'm like, but wait a minute. The squad has got exponentially better in the past 3 or 4 years. It's not to say that Neymar is not good enough a player. It's that the squad is that good right now that they may not need Neymar to win the competitions. It shouldn't take anything away from how good Neymar is as a player, because we've seen what Neymar's done.
even a half-fit Neymar, you saw glimpses at the 2018 World Cup, and you see what he does for Brazil when he's at full flight. It's a no-brainer. Like it was just mentioned now for PSG, he doesn't want to be there, and yet he's decided both of their past two games for them and got them 6 points out of 6.
There you go. Bang on, bang on. Right, before we wrap it up, KG, talk to us about Bielsa, because he won an award tonight, didn't he?
Yeah, he certainly has. And looking at the reaction on Twitter, you know, everyone's got something to say about it. You got Derby players pictured in, you got Gary Lineker, Matt Letizier. He's won the FIFA Fair Play Award for allowing Aston Villa to equalise when they had a player, in inverted commas, down injured. So there's a whole lot of, there is so much going on about the Spygate and everything, but Spygate had nothing to do with allowing somebody to go on and score. It was blown up. The Spygate thing was blown up so much, and you know, it doesn't affect what he did in that Villa game. I personally wouldn't have done it though. I was with Janssen. I said, no man, don't let him score, man, because if we had a player down, they wouldn't have stopped the game either. You know what I mean? And they would not have let us score a free goal. But, you know, it's given Twitter and the football world a lot of content right now. So I'll let you gents read that when you get off.
Well, the funny thing is, this whole Spygate thing was, as you said, blown right out of proportion. A lot of teams do that, for crying out loud. We've spoken to coaches on the show and they've said, yeah, you know, we've seen other teams do it to us and vice versa and whatnot. And I know one team in Germany was actually flying a drone over Hoffenheim's training ground to see what they're doing. It's not anything new, but because it's out here, and I think because Bielsa's Argentinian, these RGs.
It's Argentinian and it's Leeds. And when you put the two together, it just makes for a media storm, because you can guarantee if it was a team like Reading or Millwall, no one would give a crap. Who cares about Reading or Millwall?
If it was Bournemouth, Eddie Howe would be revolutionising the English game. Get him a Spurs as next manager. Yeah.
We had the unfortunate thing of it as well being brought up by England's golden boy, Frank Lampard. So it gives it even more of a storyline. Yeah. You know, it's not how we do things over here, he says, and everything else like that. But when it comes to the player final, when they beat us, he didn't even shake Bielsa's hand. But yeah. I thought that's not how we do things. But this is what it is over here. It's always selective of when it's the English way, the right way. It's all when it suits, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You think you guys will go up this season?
Yeah, I think so this year. I think it's going to be our year. We've dominated every game we've played so far this year. It hasn't even been close. Yeah, but we've just been unfortunate.
Points,
yeah, I know. We're dropping points because we're not finishing all the dominate and creative chances that we've had. And then
of course,
teams
you got banned for that at the end of it.
Expelliarmus.
He's missing a lot, but when teams go up, they know they're playing for the draw. But when they go up and they have their one shot, that goes in. But we as Leeds fans, we expect it. Just like on the weekend against Derby, when we missed the penalty, we knew what was coming. We knew what was coming.
I got home and I was thinking, how is this? Because I was listening in. I was thinking, how is this still 1-0? And then they pulled Chris Wilder off from the bench, and I thought, this guy's not scored in like 2 years. Watch. And then what happens to finish? I'm like, how? And this is what, the Championship is such a cruel league.
It really is. Savage.
Man. It's just savage, some of the things that just happened. I've watched so many games when teams batter a team and then they come and then they score like in the last minute and either win or get a point or whatever. So, like, It's so hard to bounce back because the schedule's so thick. So you're playing again a couple of days later, and then that's why teams go on like runs of defeats. But when you're on it and you're winning, you might go on a 10 to 12 game run and shoot yourself
up
the table.
It's so volatile.
Well, at the moment, we're still top, you know what I mean? And we're top by even dropping points off games where we shouldn't drop points. But this is the only way most of the teams in the league will get points against us, is when they hit us on the break. And take their chance when they can get it. Because up until, I think it was like the 60th minute, Derby didn't have a touch in our box. Not one touch in our box, but yet they still came away with a point. You know, and they're celebrating like they won the whole game. It's mad. It's so mad. But yeah, another year under Bielsa, it's you can tell that the players are more used to the system. They look ready. He needs to not be so stubborn. I love Bielsa, man. He's given me the love back for Leeds so much after the past few years of crap. But he does need to just not be so loyal to a certain couple of players and change it once in a while, even if they're not injured or suspended.
Mm. Well, I just don't like Chris Martin because he shares the same name as the guy from Coldplay, and I fucking hate Coldplay.
Coldplay are decent. Come on,
No, thank you. You're saying
well, the early noughties Coldplay was cool, but then after that, damn, that shit was depressing, man. didn't someone commit suicide to their music or something like that?
What? I wouldn't bet against it.
Jesus Christ. Right, gentlemen, shall we wrap this up and then stick under the Christmas tree? Let's do it. Right, before I let you guys go, Twitter handles, plugging anything you possibly can. D, go on.
Double D on Twitter, Instagram, SoundCloud, everything. That's DUBULDEE. And I am part of the D&D Football Factory. That's at DD40Factory_ on Twitter.
Splendid. Toby, thank you for jumping on, mate.
Yeah, thanks. I follow you, Daniel. I think for me, it's just follow myself and my podcast account. So my podcast account is Tapping Football. So just one word. So TAPINFOOTBALL. Tapping Football on Instagram and Twitter. And if you want to follow me personally, my Twitter handle and Instagram at is Tapping Tobes. So TAPINTOBS.
Great stuff. And the latest episode has been released today, right?
It's being released tomorrow, actually. Tomorrow morning. Yeah, we had a few issues with the audio, so yeah.
Oh, okay. Because yeah. I've downloaded it, so I'll.
I've released it tonight, so obviously going to promote it tomorrow.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
No worries. Excellent. KG.
Yeah, I'm on that Twitter at KAG5B. Any championship teams who fans that want to come at me for anything Leeds, let's do it. You know, because you know our team is superior. No. Yeah, that's where I'm at Twitter.
And you like the ice hockey as well?
Yeah, I love it, man. Love ice hockey. Love NBA.
Oh, I love NBA. Love NBA. Hey, you're an NBA guy. Hey, we just got to talking, baby.
I am, but I don't know if you're gonna feel sick at what I'm saying, but I support LeBron James, so wherever he's gone, I've gone.
I'm the same.
One of my friends, man.
I support LeBron or any team who can actually rival the Golden State Warriors. That's me.
I'm a Miami Heat guy. I have been for like almost 20 years, but thing is, my Steph Curry's my guy, man. Steph's my guy. I'm a Miami Heat guy.
I was with Miami Heat for 4 years, so yeah.
Because of course you're with LeBron. We had a good run.
My friend bought one of those customized LeBron jerseys when he was at Miami for £180, and then he went to Cleveland a few months later, so he's never actually worn it.
I had one of those back in 2012, the LeBron jersey. Before they got absolutely trounced by Spurs the year later.
Who was voted MVP last term?
some Greek guy.
Oh god. Yeah, Giannis, yeah.
Oh, he's still golden.
I had to get it in. I'm still living off 2004, mate. Don't worry about it.
What was your striker's name back in 2000?
Kyrie, what was it? Well,
Karisteas,
a striker.
Yeah,
Karisteas,
that's the one.
It was an Ajax for a bit. But yeah, we had a decent team.
Giannis
Antetokounmpo, yeah, lovely. His brother plays as well, doesn't he?
Yeah,
think
it's both of them do.
Lovely. There you go. Well, look, we can't have decent basketball players and not have shit footballers. I mean, Arsenal have got a shit Greek player, so you know, we've got to do something. Different sports, you know. I mean, we don't have Sampras anymore to brag about, but anyway. Anyway, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. Ladies and gents, thank you for listening. Give us a follow on Twitter at Shooter Defence. We have a Facebook group page, although no one bothers to use it anymore. So what's the fucking point? So until next time, ladies and gents, and theys, have a good one.